Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka, where it's 33 degrees, breezy with some light snow this morning. Today is Monday, January 9th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. An investigating officer has recommended that charges be dropped against the sole survivor of a 2010 Coast Guard helicopter crash off Washington coast that killed three crewmen. The Associated Press obtained a copy of Captain Andrew Norris's report. In it, he says he does not conclude that Lieutenant Lance Leone was faultless during the flight, but he says the charges focus on alleged navigational failures by Leone and tie those to the helicopter's destruction and two of the crew members' deaths. Norris says it is in making this link that the charges fail. Prosecutors, during a military hearing last month in Juneau, argued that Leone did not fulfill his duties as a co-pilot and should face court-martial. Norris's recommendations will be reviewed by the Coast Guard commander in Alaska, who is not bound by them. VHF Weather Radio is back online after an outage that began New Year's Eve. The National Weather Service's signal broadcasts from Bjorka Island to anyone with a VHF radio in the Sitka area. The repair work required crews to make a couple of trips to Bjorka in less than ideal weather. Joel Curtis, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service's Juneau office, looked up the wind speed at the time the crews were traveling out to Bjorka.
Oh, my. East-southeast at about 18 knots, gust to 27 knots, up that a little bit for miles per hour, and you can bet, you know, they were not having fun on that trip.
Curtis says the National Weather Service really appreciates the work to get the radio back online and the patience of the public during the outage. Late last month, we brought you profiles of four Sitkins who participated in a study of the community's distinctiveness. The fifth and final profile in this series is not of an individual, but of a place, the Sheldon Jackson campus. Reporter Diana Saverin is a Kingsley Trust Fellow from Yale University. In addition to interviewing Sitkins, Saverin spent a part of last summer trying to understand what's happening at Sheldon Jackson, both from the perspective of the people who made the school one of the state's most important educational institutions for Alaska Natives, and from the perspective of those who are building a new future on the site. This story has two parts. Part one today begins about a year ago, when the historic Sheldon Jackson campus was still boarded up with a very uncertain future.
For Sitkins like Roger Schmidt, the old Sheldon Jackson campus was difficult to ignore.
The campus hits a nerve. It's right downtown, and I think that most of us that live here, we think Sitka's gorgeous. It's why I live in Sitka. It's because it's beautiful, you know, beyond just sort of like, you know, superficially beautiful, but like spiritually beautiful place here. And Sheldon Jackson is right there, right at the edge of, you know, right at the edge of our downtown, and it's gorgeous. But there's nothing gorgeous about full sheets of plywood covering every single window. Well, how could that be? I mean, we're not a community that's failing. And yet it just kept saying, you're failing, you're failing, you're failing.
The clump of empty buildings with broken windows and plywood provokes images of deserted industrial buildings, almost looking like old car factories in Detroit. But these buildings were nestled between snow-capped mountains in a full harbor, near the center of this town of 9,000 people. Instead of quaint and communal, like the rest of Sitka, the space lay hollow and unused for 4 years.
I went to school there from my seventh grade year through high school.
Such hollowness defies over a century of rich history. Isabella Brady is a Sitkin who went to Sheldon Jackson in the 1940s.
And as I talk to the graduates of SJ, they all give credit to where they are in life today.
When the buildings above Lincoln Street emptied out 4 years ago, the idea and legacy of Sheldon Jackson remained strong, and continues to remain strong for many. SJ was the oldest educational institution in Alaska. It was founded in 1878 as a training school for boys, just 11 years after the purchase of Alaska, and it eventually added a high school in 1917 and a college in 1944. At the time, and through the middle of the 20th century, Alaska Natives could not attend public schools in Sitka. After going through the Bureau of Indian Affairs Elementary School, Alaska Native students could enroll to board at Sheldon Jackson Institute, a Presbyterian mission school, starting in the seventh grade, including Isabella Brady.
They taught us manners, and it was very interesting. It was all very disciplined and It was kind of like a melting pot for us there because we got to know each other. We formed friends from around Southeast, and I believe that you'll find that if you talk to the ones that went to SJ when we had nowhere else to go, are very dedicated to the school.
For a generation of former students in Sitka and around the state, it's a place full of memories. The gym at Sheldon Jackson is named for Herb Diedrichson, who also built a life here.
Right. It held 7th and 8th graders and freshmen. And they were the small boys.
In the 70s, SJ began to suffer from financial troubles. Surviving as a small liberal arts college is not easy, as the plight of other similar institutions can attest. Its previous competitor, the Rangel Institute, closed down in 1978. Cost of operations went up and enrollment went down. In the 70s, SJ also nearly closed. An ad in the Sitka Sentinel seeking help was entitled, "Sheldon Jackson Must Not Die," and it didn't. A donor from San Francisco, Jane Newall, saved it with a $700,000 donation. Since its rescuing in 1980, it struggled to stay afloat. And 4 years ago, in June of 2007, with several million dollars worth of debt, the college was in need of an 11th-hour donor yet again. The college petitioned the city for a $1 million loan. John Hulse served on the assembly at the time.
Well, they had voted. I was on the assembly. We had voted to do a loan, and that they could make a request for the money. And then when the request came, the request was denied. And so the upshot of that was that the money was not available. There were personalities involved in it, decisions that were made for the wrong reasons, I think. Not for the best of Sitka or the campus. That wasn't the cause. The closure of the school was not the cause. It was the last straw, probably.
Reporter Diana Saverin is a Kingsley Trust Fellow from Yale University. In the second part of this story tomorrow, Saverin explores the circumstances surrounding Sheldon Jackson's change in direction from decay to a tentative new beginning. Alaska has one of the fastest-growing senior populations in the nation. The Pacific Northwest is looking at a similar situation. The increasing older population is fueling interest in a new breed of nonprofit that seeks to enable seniors to stay in their own homes longer. Northwest News Network correspondent Tom Bonsi reports that this involves a twist on the adage, "It takes a village."
Philip Thiel is 91 years old. The naval architect lives in a century-old craftsman-style house in Seattle's University District, and that's where he wants to stay.
As far as I'm concerned, I would not like to leave this place. Living in a group situation is something I couldn't tolerate. I'd kill myself before I had to do that.
Thiel says he and his wife manage pretty well right now. Their two-story house is stuffed to the rafters with the books, artwork, and projects of a life well-lived. But the couple can feel their advancing age, and they realize they'll need more help soon with basic household chores, like that light bulb at the top of the stairs.
To change that tube, I have to bring in a stepladder and put it partly on the landing and partly on the stairs and climb up, and that's kind of trepidatious.
In the old days, you'd ask your kid to climb up there, or maybe the teenager from down the street when he comes over to mow the lawn. But they'd done grown up and gone.
We have kids and we call them occasionally, but one lives in Munich, Germany, another lives in London, and a third lives in Los Angeles. And they're not going to drop around for a weekend call type of thing.
So the Thiels are looking into joining a virtual village. It's not a village in the literal sense, but a local network of volunteers and service providers dedicated to helping the elderly age in place. The concept originated in Boston, then grew into a national movement that's now arriving in the Northwest. Tom LaPointe was recently hired to start a village organization in Moscow, Idaho.
The silver tsunami is the term that's being tossed about. We are trying to get ready for what is anticipated to be a glut of baby boomers retiring within the next 20 or more years.
LaPointe's nonprofit, named My Own Home, aims to serve a vast middle ground of seniors, those who are too well off to qualify for public services, but not rich enough to afford their own staff to do things like change light bulbs. Judy Kinney directs a similar startup called Northeast Seattle Together.
When someone calls us, they may say, "I need help with transportation." We're going to be able to work with them to see if it's a volunteer that helps, if it's a vetted vendor that helps, or if there's a community service that's in place. And so that's the process that we're going to do when someone picks up the phone. people have called it a concierge, where you call and say, I need this help. We help you figure out the best choice.
Kinney's group is one of about half a dozen in the Northwest aiming to launch in the first half of 2012. A pair in Oregon are already in operation, one in Florence on the coast, and there's the High Desert Village in Bend. The most requested services there are rides to the doctor, simple home repairs, help with grocery shopping, and picking up prescriptions or big items. In Moscow, Idaho, Tom LaPointe imagines snow shoveling, yard work, or computer tech support will also rank high.
On the other hand, if you need daily care, 24/7 care, that is not what we do. We don't do bathing services, for example, etc. We are here and we exist for the folks who might need a little extra assistance, that light bulb that I talked about earlier.
LaPointe says his nonprofit is not a charity. It, like the others, will charge a membership fee. In the Palouse, that comes to $450 per year for a single person and $550 for a household. LaPointe says he aims for 40 members by the end of next year. That's how many the front desk in Bend has signed up, though the High Desert Village membership is cheaper because there's no paid staff. I'm Tom Bonsi in Seattle.
Orthodox Christians around the world celebrated the Feast of the Nativity this past Saturday, January 7th. Russian Christmas, as it is locally known, occurs after Western celebrations due to a 13-day discrepancy between traditional Julian and Gregorian calendars. You can see a picture from this Saturday's celebration at St. Michael's Cathedral and hear more of their choir by visiting our website, kcaw.org. This is KCAW in Sitka.